It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 378. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me suggestions for any show topic or any tech question. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. The phone number is 240-949-2450. And that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. You can follow me on Twitter to learn when I am going live, when I'm posting the content after I'm done editing a show, or when there's going to be a Tech Vets. And my Twitter account, twitter.com/Mike Tech Show. And also, you can follow me on Facebook. Send me a friend request, facebook.com/Mike Tech Show. I've been very, very busy this week. If you've listened to my last show, I missed a couple days consulting due to being in the hospital. And so now coming back full tilt, trying to catch up, it's difficult and trying to fit everybody in. And I have, I'm very fortunate. I have some new clients and some clients I visited and an emergency client for a restaurant that... Interesting, they just brought their computer back from Geek Squad, and now there were still some issues, so they got a recommendation from one of their friends who knew me recommended me, and they talked to me for a minute, and then they're very close to where I live, and I was able to go down to the restaurant and fix them all up and get everything working, so that was great. I have a couple clients that I'm doing next week, and a long time ago, matter of fact, back in May, I put a proposal for doing some work at an orthodontist who was 100% Mac in their office. I was just informed today that my proposal was accepted. I said, I have to change some things. That was back in May. I got to check some costs for some of the hardware that I had recommended. And it's not a big project, but it's small. But I'm in the door, which is what I want to be. I want to show what I'm able to do. That's one. I have two more small businesses that are 100% Mac. If this works out, I'm going to have three clients that are businesses that are 100% Mac. That's very, very interesting seeing that. And just a quick mention, last night I was able to get the iOS 5, and it took a long time, which I knew it would, to download. But first you have to download and upgrade your iTunes to 10.5. And it took longer for me to get the iTunes upgrade on my Windows 7 system than it did to actually get the update for the iOS. And it was very interesting. My son Ryan, who was doing his from a Mac, was the exact opposite. iTunes came down fast, but when it came time for the upgrade of the operating system for his iPhone, it said it would take 8 hours. Where mine was only an hour, hour and a half for the wait. Well, I was able to get mine first and start working, and it was a good thing because I was up against, you know, when I wanted to go to bed. I got the iOS upgraded, and right away, after the firmware was applied and the upgrade happened on my, I have a 3GS, I had to sign into my wireless network, and I was really glad to see that. And activate iCloud. And that's the feature I want to talk about. I know, especially Winston in the chat and others, who if you have access to an Exchange server, you're using an Exchange server, and you have an iPhone, via ActiveSync, you automatically are synchronized your contacts and your calendar, and it's very nice. Life is good. Synchronization is good. But for those of us without an Exchange server, we have to go to other programs and utilities to get good synchronization, or when we sync and hardwire into iTunes on our machine, we get a synchronization. And actually, that sufficed for me because I didn't change contacts that much, but I was living with two separate calendars all the time, and that became a hassle. Last night was the first time that I had true synchronization of my calendar. iCloud gives you 5 gigs of free space. It doesn't sound like a lot, but when I was actually finished the iOS 5 upgrade and I activated the iCloud, which all you need is an iTunes account and it's free, and once I can turn that on and said I want to back up my entire iPhone to iCloud, it only took a couple minutes, and my whole total for the backup was only 220 meg. So just insignificant of the 5 gig. I may never go over that 5 gig. And if you do, the price is very reasonable. I think to go to like 10 gig, that's $20 a year. So the space is so small that's needed for an iPhone. Where the space is going to come up is when you are saving your music. And when you want that music, that's going to take up the space. And I think that's where they're going to make their money. And it's, you're going to have to see how much space you want to save in iCloud in order to synchronize with all your devices. Let me back up a second. iCloud is a service that allows you to have full synchronization of music, pictures, apps, calendar, reminders, everything you need that's on your iPhone, and you can truly synchronize it across multiple devices, whether it's an iPad, a Mac system, a Windows system. Make sure what I've done, and the reason why I want to go over this is even if you don't have an iPhone, you may have clients that will need your help for this, or you may have friends or family members. I think it's important that everybody understands the process because you are going to come across somebody that will maybe need your help or ask a question about this. The iCloud service, once you get it set up, go to Apple, and I'm going to have a link in the show notes, and download the Windows or Mac client. So I downloaded the free Windows client. When I installed it, it seemed that I had Outlook, and it automatically started a synchronization process between my Outlook and iCloud. So now I have my iPhone set up. When I change a calendar event in Outlook on my PC, it automatically syncs wirelessly through iCloud down to my phone. You can turn on photo streaming, which allows you that any pictures that I take, it will automatically sync to iCloud. And then when I go to my machine, my Windows system, those photos will be there. Apple, I think, got this all to work. I've ran into one small glitch, and I have a question. And it's not directly related to iCloud as it is the app. I have an app called World Card Mobile. Check that out if you have an iPhone or an iPad. It allows you to take a picture of a business card, and it's got OCR capability, and it scans the card and automatically puts all the fields in the contact, and it was great. It recognizes everything. You need good light when you're taking the picture. And I suspect that when I get my iPhone 4S, that with the higher resolution and the better optics, that I'm going to get a better scan or a better picture of the business card. So I'm looking forward to that. But on my 3GS, I was able to take a couple business cards, take the picture, it adds it to my contacts in my iPhone, but it does not put it in a group that allows it to sync to the iCloud. I'm like, I want to sync this. I want this contact information to get back to Outlook on my Windows computer. That's the one piece that I have to solve, and maybe it's just going to take a tech support question to the app author that wrote this app prior to iCloud coming out, and so maybe there's going to be something that hopefully they'll have an upgrade to the app to allow it to put it in a group on the iPhone that will sync to iCloud. It's very easy to set this all up. I set this up in minutes and was completely syncing between Outlook and my iPhone, and that is the first time that I had seamless synchronization since I've entered the world of the iPhone. So very, very happy. In the chat, it came up, MobileMe was just a disaster. Terrible. Hated that. Now, I'm looking forward to also upgrading my iPad to the latest OS and then make that part of the whole synchronization process. I am the typical user of what iCloud was invented for. Someone who has multiple devices spanning Windows and Mac, spanning iPad, iPhone, all the devices, and I need seamless synchronization between every single device where there's one spot that it can sync to. And I will report back as I learn more and I try to do some more advanced things, and I will talk about it. Don't want to take up any more time on that. Let's take care of some business. I want to thank GoToMeeting for being a sponsor of the podcast. And you know, today with everybody on the go, you want to save money on travel. You want to save money on gas and be able to present and demonstrate. Maybe it's a project that you need to collaborate on. Maybe it's a sales presentation. Whatever the needs, where you need someone to see your desktop and they see your desktop on their on the screen, and you can easily demonstrate whatever you need to, GoToMeeting is the right service. And you can try it free for 30 days by going to GoToMeeting.com. Click on the Try It Free button and enter the promo code podcast. So that's click on the Try It Free, enter the promo code podcast, and you will have access to an incredible service to kick the tires and play with it for 30 days. Couple quick announcements before I get to the stack of email. This Saturday, I am hosting the Windows Tips and Tricks SIG at the Philadelphia Area Computer Society. So if you are in the area of Willow Grove, Pennsylvania, please stop by. Links will be in the show notes. It's paxnet.org, and you can get the directions for how to go. I'm going to be talking about portable apps and simple home networking. It's going to be a lot of fun. Looking forward to it. Going to have a couple giveaways, so hope to see you there if you're in the area. I'm always embarrassed to talk about this, but I am so thankful. For the seventh year in a row, I have been nominated for a podcast award in the technology category. But this year, I've been nominated in two categories, the best produced podcast and also the technology category. As I was looking at this, my son joked, now you got two categories you could lose in this year. And I'm like, no. It is truly an honor to be nominated, and I really mean that from the bottom of my heart, and I thank everybody for all of your hard work getting me nominated. But there's one step left, and that's to go out and vote, and you can vote every day, and it just takes a couple minutes. you can go to podcastawards.com, go to technology, pick the Mike Tech Show, then go to the Best Produced Podcast and pick the Mike Tech Show, and then pick, go to the other categories and pick whoever you want. But one email address per day, you're allowed to vote. So let's get the vote out, and it would be great to win. I have lost to Twit a few times. I've lost to Security Now twice, and I've lost to Dignation. That's some pretty big shows. None of them are in the technology category this year. Twit's in the People's Choice or the video category. You know, Techzilla's in video category. So there's lots of great shows that I'm nominated with. But those super-duper big shows aren't in the category. So there might be a chance to win, and that would be nice. I got to admit, it would be great to win. But it is an honor to be nominated, and I thank you all for your continued support. I really appreciate it. Let's get to some email. This is from Roger, and he says, well, I presented and it was well received. This is someone who was putting a presentation together, and he says, if I judge by the questions received, the main interest of the attendees was whole disk encryption with TrueCrypt, which is how I configure my laptop, and safe file sync with Boxcryptor. Some but less discussion of password management and password strength. And he has the presentation, which I'm going to link. And at the end, some attendees discussed LastPass, eWallet, RoboForm. Discussions with our official technology folks also revealed that they do not consider Google Docs a safe place to keep student grades, though nobody was willing to go officially on the record with that statement. Thanks again for your great podcast. Best wishes. And this is Roger in Fresno. So thank you, Roger, for getting back to me. A couple weeks ago, he emailed me about doing this presentation, and we were going back and forth. So that was a great follow-up. Thank you. This is from Hilton Young, and he's written me a lot over the years. And this is in response to show 375, that side-by-side error I talked about. I've still gotten a few responses, so I want to share this one with you. And then he has some other things. And he says, Mike, I'm sure you have fixed your side-by-side configuration problem. Yes, but it was a complete redo of the computer. He says, from episode 374 by now, through the re-image. But just in case you haven't, I had to solve the same problem at work. We had the 2010 version of our custom SQL database, and NetBIOS-based software came out last year and on a lot of fresh installs. We were able to fix it with XP by removing the Visual C++ redistributable and some other song and dance. Yeah, but it's that other song and dance that we need the details for, because I removed that and reinstalled and it didn't help. But we couldn't figure out how to fix it with Vista or Windows 7. And I was in a Windows 7 situation. I did some testing and found a fix, though it takes some time due to having to do a large download. I fixed it by uninstalling our software completely, then uninstalling the Visual C++ 2008 redistributable. For some reason, the version that got installed did something with the software manifest for our software. I then installed Visual C++ 2008 Express Edition, making sure to uncheck SQL Server 2008 Express. The version of the redistributable that has C++ complete programming language installed was more up to date and it worked every time. Once you get the install completed and install the program that was receiving the side-by-side errors, you just go back into Programs and Features, Add or Remove Programs in XP, and uninstall Visual C++ 2008 Express Edition, and it leaves behind the proper redistributable. Now that I think about it, The only problem is that the side-by-side configuration error in XP does not say it is such an error. You have to view it in the event viewer log, and it will reveal itself there. Keep up the good work, Mike. I have some of my other knowledge from work experience on my tech blog, and I will put that in the show notes. Sorry for the gratuitous advertising, but if you want to support me, visit my site and click on the Google Ads. It's free, and clicks are earning me around $1 to $3 at a time right now. You know, I don't mess with Google Ads, as you know, on my website just because I don't like them when I visit other websites. So if I don't like it, I'm not going to put you through it. And that's why I don't put the Google Ads. But I do have my Amazon link. And if you buy from Amazon or know anybody that purchases from Amazon, send them to amazon.mikenation.net or miketechshow.com/Amazon and make your purchase, and that contributes to the show. He continues here, Mike, I'm sure this has been covered before, but I just wanted to put it out here again. At my day job, I was helping a user get his internet connection fixed via the phone. His company laptop would browse sites over a wired connection, but would not display any pages when connected via mobile, broadband, or Wi-Fi. He would get page cannot be displayed errors after a brief wait. Somehow, the company intranet worked when he connected to the VPN over the wireless connection, but he was unable to browse any websites. He could just synchronize his software and his Exchange account. I exhausted all the company knowledge, and because the weekend was here, I advised him I would go beyond what the company allows and some personal knowledge. I had him open the command line and run netsh winsock reset. Lo and behold, his connection was fixed after the required reboot. We had tried all kinds of things like uninstalling the wireless NIC driver. That's what I would have recommended. Power cycling the network and resetting IE. He did all the things. Resetting WinSock works a lot of the time when you get the weirder networking problems. So much so that now if I hear something beyond the scope of normal troubleshooting, as long as I won't get in trouble for it, I will reset WinSock first. Troubleshooting with the company supported knowledge base and tools took about 2 hours, over 2 days, and 3 phone calls. Using my knowledge, we fixed his problem in 15 minutes, leaving me 5 minutes to wrap up my work before my work week ended. Thanks, Mike, for your show and its community of techs. You are what I listen to whenever I drive my car for more than 10 minutes. Hilton, thank you very much for that email and all that info. Now, his reset of the WinSock reminds me of what happened this week and what I ran into yesterday. If you listen to Tech Vets on Tuesday night, we record it. Carrie and I talked about one of the nasty rootkits, which was the rootkit zero access that I've ran into with a client. And Carrie armed me with using the WinSock fix utility and also the 2 sys files that you need to replace if you have a problem with the TCP/IP stack. So armed with all this, I went on site yesterday afternoon to attack this rootkit problem, which was identified by CombiFix. But then after CombiFix was done running, things didn't get better. And CombiFix warned us, saying this is a nasty, ugly rootkit that destroys the TCP/IP stack. When I got to the system, it was a mess. I put these 2 sys files into Windows System 32 drivers. I put the files in there. I ran the WinSock fix, rebooted. I was not getting on the network. I was getting an IP address, but it was almost like the network card wasn't even working. So I reinstalled the Dell drivers for the network card. Nothing. That didn't fix it. About a half hour into this, I cut my losses. And I told myself that I was only going to give it at most an hour, and then I am redoing the system. There was no real data on the system. They live off the network. They have an Exchange server. As a matter of fact, a small business server, 2003. I have all the software they need on the server. It's Office 2007. And that was basically it. That was really the user's only app. You know, we got Firefox and some other things. So to me, redoing the system, I just whipped out my Dell XP with Service Pack 3 CD, popped it in, blew away the partition, reinstalled it. An hour and a half later, I'm done. Rather than spend hours and hours trying to fix this, and you know, this rootkit is embedded so deeply, I would have never known that I really got it all. I mean, the only way you can really guarantee in extracting such a rootkit is by getting rid of the drive. And, you know, just you got to get rid of that partition. You got to blow it away. The lessons learned. They have Symantec. I don't like Symantec. And this is a not-for-profit organization, so I was able to put Avira on there, the free version. I got everything upgraded because the Jewish holidays, yesterday and today, I didn't realize how many holidays there are. Like, you have last Thursday and Friday, this Thursday and Friday, and there's holidays next Thursday and Friday. So with this organization, they have a lot of days off, and my user will not be back to the office until Monday. So I literally had this whole weekend to resolve it, but I wanted to get this done last night. And what took longer was running the update. So before I left the office, I made sure LogMeIn was installed, kicked off the Windows upgrade, and there were 114 updates. You can tell I don't have my CD slipstreamed properly. So that's something that I have to make sure that I get that fully slipstreamed so I don't have to do this again. But 114 updates. So I just left, let it run, and then I checked in last night. And the only real interaction is the interaction when it's installing Internet Explorer 8. And I did that, let it go, logged back in later, and seen that it was all done for the final reboot. So with that, everything's working great. And I wanted to share that because I didn't give up. But time is so important. With some of these repairs and some of the, you know, diagnosing a given problem, I can't spend 3 or 4 hours in trying to fix a problem when it's going to take me an hour and a half to redo the system. Now, sometimes it's not practical because of the software or the specific configurations involved on a particular workstation. I may go the extra mile to try to repair it. Now, great example. I don't know if you could see it behind me. There's a laptop I was given today that I haven't even opened it up yet. And I was told the following: Mike, need you to fix this. It was from someone, and I was at a meeting today, and it was someone that they know, and then gave them their laptop. When you open up the laptop, it's filled with pop-ups saying you're infected and you need to buy this software. I said, that is the infection. I know what I'm looking at already on that system, and I will attack in safe mode with Combo Fix first, see if that can rip out and fix. And usually with those pop-ups, that's enough, and it will be fine. And then I'll take a look, give it a good, you know, tweaking, and get it to run right. But I have a bunch of them. There's also another desktop behind me on the floor that I've totally redid that I'm dropping off tomorrow. This is a great idea. Have a client whose house has 9 computers in it. I thought I was bad when I got more than that here. And 9 computers, that's a lot of systems. This system was sitting as a spare, and we're going to use it as a backup. So I just put XP on it, and what we're going to do is synchronize and have all the systems around the house and have it sync back to this one computer that's going to act as the server. And then we're going to have Carbonite installed on that on this one computer to back up all the backups up into the cloud for Carbonite. So that's a great solution. And we discussed that a week ago when I was over there, when he had these extra computers, and it's a nice system. You know, it's got a couple gigs of memory. It's got a large hard drive. And, you know, it was running XP, and he retired that. And it was just sitting there doing nothing. I said, hey, I'll reinstall XP, get it cleaned up. We'll make it the server in your house as a peer work, you know, peer server. And now you have a central place for all of your computers to back up to. Just wanted to digress and talk about, you know, some of the things I'm working on. Here's an email from Andrew Williams. Hi, Mike. Just thought I'd drop you a line to let you and your listeners know about a utility that makes my life as a tech so much easier and a bit of hardware that has made our business much more resilient to hard drive failure. As a tech, I carry around a CD case containing bootable CDs and DVDs containing operating systems, Shadow Protect RE, Acronis, Ultimate Boot CD, Gparted, VMware ESXi, etc. Although useful, it means that the device I want to work on has to have a CD/DVD drive attached. This is sometimes inconvenient, as I work in manufacturing environments that may contain touchscreen systems with no built-in drive. CDs are also slow to boot, and this is really annoys me in 2011. I've now started using UNET Bootin'. It's an amazing, simple EXE file that takes my ISO file and allows you to quickly make a bootable USB stick from it. All I do now is keep a folder containing all the ISO files I may need on my laptop. I then make a bootable USB stick of whatever I need in a few seconds. Of course, I'm sure it's possible to make a menu system, but utilities are being patched and updated all the time, and I don't have the time to do this, especially when I can make the stick quickly anyway. I keep the freebie USB sticks from seminars, shows, and label them up with Acronis, VMware, ESXi, etc. The next bit of kit I'd like to talk about is a hard drive duplicator from StarTech. There is a US page for StarTech. He has the link here. Like I mentioned above, I work in a manufacturing environment. We use a lot of touchscreen PCs and other industrial-type PCs. They are subject to a lot of vibration, and most of them use 2.5-inch IDE PATA drives, P-A-T-A drives, hard drives. Drive failure is a worry to us because the software is often installed by a foreign manufacturer and impossible to reinstall without input from them, which is normally chargeable. The potential downtime could be hours or days. In the past, I would have normally cloned and imaged these systems to a file and kept the file somewhere safe. This is fine, but downtime in our organization costs us lots of money. So we now have spare physical clone 2.5-inch drives on site, which can be grabbed from the DR closet and installed by any competent member of the staff. This cloning is being done with the StarTech device, which can quickly clone any kind of IDE or SATA hard drive without software. It's a great idea and also keeps an image file. The PC can quickly be back working again without me being on site. Anyway, hope this helps you and your listeners. Keep up the great work. This is great. And the UNET Bootin, UNETBOOTIN, I will find a link. That's a great idea if you are involved in an environment that can't handle that. Now, as I was reading this, I thought he was going to say he has a portable USB DVD burner. Now, I have one of them that I carry with me, and it's very small and compact. It doesn't require power. It just requires the two USB ports, but you may not have two USB ports available on a system to be able to take advantage of that. And I've ran into that situation. Thank you, Andrew, for that email. This is from Luke. I am a sysadmin at a medium-sized company and have the following situation where I could use some input. I have everyone at the office on a fixed IP address, but because some people have laptops, they need to plug their computers in elsewhere where there is a DHCP server on the network. I have a DHCP server as well for cases where that's required. I'd like it to be real easy for users to switch between the two, the fixed and dynamic IP. When at work, they use the fixed. When at home, they use the DHCP connection. Is there a simple way to achieve this, assuming people will remember to switch back to fixed when coming to the office, preferably a way to force them to use fixed at work? I'm doing this because of networking issues we've had. We currently don't have domain controllers on the network or Windows Server, so there may be other problems that cause congestion, such as multiple computers competing for the role of domain controller, but that's another story. Any help appreciated. Best regards, Luke. Luke, first thing you should look at is why. Why are you not using DHCP for all devices? It is such a mess to manage static IP addresses in a work environment. I know, and I've had clients that have clung to static IP addresses, and I had to convince them that's not the way to live. You don't want static IP addresses. But that could be a long story, and that could take some planning to get rid of the static IP addresses. So with that, there are utilities, and I can't think of off the top of my head, and this has happened before, and I've talked about one of these utilities, I know, in a show a long time ago. I had this same situation with not just that, but with different printers and different settings, and there is a network utility, and I think it's free right now, that you can install, that you can set up your network connections based on your location. When you boot, you pick your location, and it will automatically make all those changes. So what it's going to do is it's going to feed all the registry changes that has to be made for that particular location. That's an old school way of doing this. That, to me, is a workaround to the problem. What I'd really like you to concentrate on is making sure that you can deploy DHCP on your network, because that's the proper way to do it. The only devices that should have static IP addresses are fixed network devices like printers, network printers, servers, something where the IP address cannot change. We need to take a look at what you're doing. And a great example, I have a client that I have taken over the network responsibility, but the previous network support person put a static IP address, changed the remote access port for each system for RDP to not be 3389, but then made it like 3388, 3387, 3386, and then put a separate port forwarding for each desktop going to that static IP address. And that was his way of taking care of the remote access to all the individual computers. It's a nightmare to manage. What you need to do is, depending on that, on what situation that has caused you to believe that you need static IP addresses, we need to look at what brought you to that step and then let's re-engineer. Maybe it is remote access to each desktop. Let's come up with an alternative to make it a lot easier than to have to deploy a custom utility or some custom setup that you're going to need. I hope that helps. And Luke, let me know so we can go further. I have still some great emails that we're going to have to wait until the next show. With that, I'm going to wrap up here. I have no music tonight. So I want to thank everybody for downloading and staying subscribed to the show. Please visit my website. And if you need any items from Amazon, use my link. It really helps contribute to the show and support the show. Don't forget to vote every day at Podcast Awards to help me out. That's it. I will be back next week. Same time, same channel. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.